Joyce Carol Oates is a literary powerhouse who's written over 100 books, 55 of them novels, along with thousands of essays and stories. Her latest work, A Widow's Story, is a memoir. It tells of the sudden death of her husband, Raymond Smith, and the year she spent struggling with that loss, published by Echo, and I'm very pleased that it brings Miss Oates back to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Is this your first memoir?
This is the first book-length memoir, yes. I wrote a book on boxing that was a kind of oblique memoir of my life with my father, who would take me to boxing matches, but there's very little about my own life.
That's
or
more
my
like
father.
Personal essay. Then.
Yeah, but sometimes a person is writing a memoir without knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with this, I was writing what turned out to be a memoir without knowing it in the beginning because I was writing journal entries and diary entries.
Is that why it's so revealing? Did you have any hesitation about publishing it?
Well, I think now if I reread parts of it, I would probably not want to publish them. I wrote it at a time when I was extremely emotional, and I thought I would just write down what it's like, this sort of raw and unmediated grief, which is a kind of madness. It was as if one part of my mind was still sane and coherent, and I would go out and teach at Princeton University and did my life in a normal way. Then another part of my mind had just completely deteriorated or collapsed. And so I was basically writing down what I was experiencing. And then about a year later, or actually more than a year later, I looked at the material again, and then I made it into a coherent book.
And what would you take out now? Are you willing to reveal that?
What would I take out? I probably would take out some of the passages that seem to be implying that people had behaved strangely or rudely, and maybe I would soften some of that.
Although people are still behaving rudely in some cases in connection to this book, some people were very angry that you didn't reveal that you got married within a year in the book, although this isn't really about that, is it?
No, it's a widow's story. So that would be a story like of a new wife. But when you're writing a book, if you're writing, say, a memoir of your father who died, and then at the end of that time your mother dies or your sister or your own child, you can't then have a final paragraph and say, oh, by the way, my mother also died, or by the way, I got married, because it violates the integrity of the book that you've written, and it's just not right. You know, somehow there's something subtle there.
You were talking earlier about your ability to compartmentalize, and in this book you do a bit of that. You tell the story from the point of view of Joyce Smith, and I was thinking, well, of course, which was your married name. There was also Rosamund Smith, one of the nom de plume you have. I don't know how to explain Lauren Kelly, another one that you have. You were teaching, you said, and able to carry on at the same time that you were doing all that. There was this whole other thing going on in your life. Have you always been able to compartmentalize in that way?
Well, I think maybe like you, I'm sure you're the same way. If you're a professional person and you've committed to do something, you're going to turn up and do it. Your life could be in shatters. You could be terribly depressed, but you put on your clothes and you go and do it. Then you may come home and collapse. But so I think the professional identity keeps all of us out there and sane and moving on and looking to the next day and the next obligation.
And that's the person you call JCO here.
Well, I suppose you could say that it sounds very strange, and people don't understand. People maybe don't believe me, but my life with my husband Raymond Smith was a complete life, and my writing life was very tangential to that. It was like, I don't know how to explain it. Ray and I had a very close, loving, intense relationship, and my writing self. Was not crucial to that relationship.
In fact, you say that you didn't really even share what happened during the day with each other. Now, he was also involved in literature. He was the editor of the Ontario Review, although he wasn't your editor. No. And you say he didn't read much of your writing.
Well, it isn't correct to say we didn't share much of what we did. We didn't share things that were distressing or negative or upsetting unless there was some reason for it. For instance,
is that possible in a marriage?
Well, I don't.
I just had a rough day. I just had a fight with the with the department chair.
Well, if it were necessary for me to know it, Ray would tell me. But I don't see any reason why in a marriage one would not try to make the other person happy and relaxed. And I always think of the other person. If I say something, is it going to upset the other person? And if I upset the other person, what is the point? Now, there may be a point where you have to tell another person, you know, I'm going in for a surgery tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But many things in a marriage, people just sort of flop down in front of one another to distress the other, make the other feel upset. I never had that relationship with Ray. He did a lot of my finances. He took care of the house. I had my career. If I got very bad reviews, if something bad had happened in my career, why would I tell him? It would only make him upset.
Unlike many couples, you didn't push each other's buttons is pretty much what you're saying here.
No,
and
no,
you didn't argue
did.
Very much
we
or at all?
No, we really didn't argue. Once I was bothered by a stalker. This is like 20, 30 years ago, long time ago. This person was stalking me, actually, and I didn't tell Ray about it. He got a telephone call from my agent in New York City who said, oh, this is horrible. Joyce's life is in danger. And Ray was very upset because I hadn't told him about that, and we talked about this. But I'm just not a person who's going to tell you bad news.
Where did you meet Ray?
I met him at graduate school in Madison, Wisconsin.
And how long did you know each other before you got married?
We knew each other for 3 months. We were together all the time, and we studied together.
There was at that age, you were in your early 20s, there wasn't that big an age difference, but at that time, it seems like a huge
difference,
8 years.
8 years, yes.
Did that set the tone for the relationship?
Well, I think it really did, of course. And also, not only that Ray was a little older than I was, he was more experienced. He lived in New York City for a while. He had been teaching. He was far ahead of me in a graduate program. He was getting a PhD. And he read more than I had in English literature. He could help me with things like the Great Vowel Shift and reading Old English. So naturally, I literally was quite a bit younger than he was.
But you didn't pry into the difficulties or separations he'd had within his family. And that surprised me. You're a writer who depends on people's personal and inner lives for her plots. You weren't curious?
Well, we talked about our families to some extent, but I never pried in anything. Like if Ray seemed not to want to talk about anything immediately, I would not pursue that. I didn't exploit our family relationship in any way. I've never written about his family or my family.
You were both in a serious automobile accident just weeks before he went into the hospital. Do you think that had anything to do with the illness, or was that just a coincidence?
Well, I think it was a year before.
Uh-huh.
It was a year, wasn't it?
Well, no. You know better than I.
It was a year before. No, I don't think so. Mm. We were injured by the airbags. We were not injured in the crash. Mm. If you've never had an airbag explode against your chest, you have no idea what it feels like. It's like getting hit with a sledgehammer. It's very, very painful. But I guess it's mostly bruises.
So it doesn't make you vulnerable to pneumonia. It doesn't have cause.
Oh, I don't think so. I've never heard of that.
Mm-hmm. What actually led you to take him to the emergency room when he did get sick?
Well, Ray had to call. He got up very early in the morning. He couldn't sleep, and he put a call into our family doctor. And it was only about 7 o'clock in the morning. The doctor's office wouldn't open for a while. And Ray said, well, he will send me to the emergency room for tests. And I said, well, if that's the case, let's just go to the emergency room because our family doctor out in Pennington doesn't have any, he's a family doctor. He couldn't do any tests. So the sensible thing would be to take a person to the emergency room, which is what I did.
And in Princeton, there's some pretty good hospitals around. Joyce Carol Oates, her latest book is a memoir called A Widow's Story. You were relieved when you heard that it was pneumonia. Pneumonia is a curable illness.
Yes, I'm always relieved when I get some news that has a name to it. It seemed that from now on, we would be in the hands of experts.
Even this situation, you were very affected by the language of the hospital. Telemetry, the use of the word present, as in the patient presents.
Yes, you would learn a whole new vocabulary under duress.
Retrospectively, why do you think you never Googled the particular kind of pneumonia he'd been diagnosed as having?
I think I was in such a state of denial and such a state of almost superstitious fragility where you don't want to know too much. It's amazing how the mind can just sort of turn off.
On the other hand, you seem to be paying a lot of attention to things because you describe small events in and around the hospital in vivid detail.
Well, those are harmless things. When you're in a hospital vigil and you're going to the hospital every day for many hours, you get to know other people. You get to know the route that you take, the elevator, everything that you see becomes really imprinted very deeply in your consciousness. And I could only shut my eyes and I can have a camera roll, you know, of seeing all this again. It's like a tape that's continually looping back.
Well, you say there are two kinds of hospital vigils.
Yes, the kind that we hope we might have where it has a happy ending. And the other kind where it has a very disastrous ending, and I don't think we're ever prepared.
You mentioned being interested in some of the other people around, like the nurse's aide, Jasmine. You really describe her quite vividly.
Yes, we had some experiences, and they're not that unusual. I don't want to suggest the Princeton Medical Center is any different from any other hospital. There were some nurse's aides, or one nurse's aide, who was a very strange person, and somewhat, I won't go into it, but she didn't seem very professional.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then there were these crises. Suddenly he had problems breathing. Now,
yes.
Why wasn't this pneumonia more treatable? In the past, you just simply gave people antibiotics and they got past it. It's a bacterial thing, isn't it?
Well, he was getting better. He was going to be discharged the following week. He was much better, but he unfortunately caught a hospital infection, so the infection was very virulent. And we read about this all the time in the newspapers, these hospital infections that are so powerful. So he was in a weakened state, and he couldn't throw off this infection. It happened within a few hours.
Did you know how he died? What happened to him in the time between when you saw him last and when he died? Did you ask? Because you were home at the time, weren't you?
Well, I was told later that he had this hospital infection in his other lung. And I've learned later that even young people in good health, if they get one of these infections, they can die within a few hours. It makes me so terrified about going into a hospital.
So what happened to the separating of your life as Joyce Smith and JCO? Was being JCO a comfort to you, a vacation from being the widow?
Well, to me, JCO is just a way of speaking. It means my professional commitments. I had to go out and give lectures and readings. I was teaching at Princeton University. It just means getting up and going out and doing your job. I wouldn't have to have a different name to it. But Joyce Smith was definitely Ray Smith's wife. And she was the widow, and I had to sign all these documents, so many legal documents, one would not believe it. So many copies of the death certificate. One would not believe what you have to do. It's as if you're punished when your spouse dies. Some arcane and hideous punishment gears up, and you suffer for it.
It's clear from the book that you've protected and valued your privacy. So after you wrote it, did you have any hesitation about publishing the book?
Well, maybe there may be things that I didn't put in, and I don't think it was that private. I think what I wanted to do was to suggest that widowhood or widowerhood is a universal experience, and what I was experiencing was not that different from what anybody else would. I never knew what grief was really like, and now I do know, and I thought if I wrote about it, if somebody read my book, that they would understand that this is not necessarily an individual's experience, but everybody's experience.
When Donald Hall's wife was dying and after she died, he said the only vacation he got from the grief was the 2 hours a day he spent writing poetry.
Oh, well, but did he call it vacation? Because he was writing about her.
Or at least a mental vacation, getting away from it for a little bit.
He was writing about her. He wrote beautiful, beautiful elegiac poems.
But he was transforming the experience into something else. Yeah. These incredible poems.
Beautiful poems for Jane Kenyon. Well, it's a way of looking at it. I mean, the many things that you do when you're in that state, you can clean the house, you can wash the floor, you can vacuum. I mean, the many things that are sort of nervous reactions, like I was always vacuuming the house or polishing a table because I was so nervous. It was very hard for me to sit still. And then the writing was something I did often late at night when I was in bed and couldn't sleep. But often during the day, I was just too nervous to sit still and write.
You got rather depressed, even had suicidal thoughts for a little while, which you talk about here. They weren't serious, were they?
Well, I'm not sure what suicidal thoughts are exactly. They seem to be consoling. Nietzsche said that the thought of suicide can get you through many a bad night. It's just a feeling that you can really get out of this. And Marcus Aurelius said something like that, too. Remember, at any time, if your life is really miserable, you can end it. And oddly enough, people do find that consoling. And for people who do commit suicide, ultimately, who have thought about it for a while, like Virginia Woolf, maybe Ernest Hemingway, it's an act, it's a decisive act that they've prepared for. It's not a spontaneous act. It's not impulsive or whimsical. But I think by the time Virginia Woolf actually committed suicide, she had thought about it carefully, and she made a decision that within that context was coherent.
You have another quote from Nietzsche. He is so quotable. I like this one. He says something like, when you lose your talent and are no longer able to do what you do, you will find out who you are.
That's right. So I felt when I couldn't write anymore, and I was so demoralized that I was actually just nothing. I was not even a wife anymore because Ray was gone. So I was sort of in the ruins of this household, having to deal with financial problems and talking to a lawyer and doing things like, it seemed like a complete nightmare. I could work all day long on the finances and legal documents and not have anything, any reason to do it except just to do it. I mean, there seemed to be no reason to do anything. If you work hard and you have a spouse or a loved one, then you go out to dinner or have a nice evening. That's the pleasure and the reward. If you're doing all these things and you don't have that spouse or a loved one, everything you're doing is empty. There's no reason for it. It's very, very depressing.
Joyce Carol Oates, her latest book, her first memoir, A Widow's Story. It's published by Echo. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.